As you had been kind of spiraling into this moment, had you sought other remedies? Had you gone to psychotherapy? Had you gone through religions? Had you been on any medications? Did you go other routes before you came to that?
Well, I'd been looking for answers. I was in a kind of dilemma. And so I was looking for some answers. Mostly the answers I was looking for was intellectual answers. I've been reading philosophy, I've been reading psychology. I hadn't been to any psychotherapy or anything like that, nor had I taken any drugs of any kind. But there was a kind of search, almost I could say a desperate search for some answer. But I was, and including I had read some spiritual philosophers without really understanding them. I looked at the religions, again, without really understanding it. And so it wasn't a gradual process of understanding. It was a very sudden disruption of the usual thought processes and the arising of something new. But then later, as I began to understand what had happened to me, I realized that this is everybody's dilemma. The unhappiness that I had been living in, that state of unhappiness, really, to a greater or lesser extent, this is how most human beings live. Moments of happiness are few and far between, but it can be otherwise. And I'm not saying that you should be seeking happiness as such. But you should be more conscious of a dimension in you that is deeper than thinking. That's where freedom lies. In every human being, there is this possibility of finding that inner freedom, a dimension that is not conditioned by your past. And then you no longer derive your sense of who you are from your personal history, because that's a dreadful restriction. To derive your sense of who you are from your personal history only. It doesn't mean you no longer have a personal history. Of course you remember your past. But that is then no longer where you get your sense of identity from. You have your memories, but your sense of identity of who you are comes directly out of the present moment, the inner space of presence, of consciousness.
Tell me, I mean, why you chose to live in Vancouver? Why do you live there?
I was living in England for many years, and I woke up one morning and I knew I had to move to the west coast of North America. I didn't know why. A very strong impulse came. I have to move. Although I liked England, I still feel a deep inner link with England. I wasn't born in England, but I spent most of my adult life there. I just had to obey this impulse. It wasn't just that it came for a few minutes. The next day it was still there. The next week it was still there. I felt, okay, I have to. I got ready. A few months later, I went, took a plane. I didn't know where it would be, California or wherever. At first I thought California, kind of the image that immediately came. I knew one person in Vancouver. I flew over to Vancouver, stayed for 2 or 3 weeks. Still not knowing why I was there, took a Greyhound bus to California, stayed with a friend for a week or two. And then suddenly the strong impulse came to get a notebook and a notepad and start the writing stream came, and that became the power of now. When my visa expired, I had to go back to England and the writing stream stopped. A couple of months later, I went back to Vancouver, and there immediately it started again. So I could only write on the West Coast, it seemed. So I moved back and forth between Vancouver and living on my savings, running out very quickly. And so the book was written partly in California and partly in Vancouver. And then circumstances arose that told me that Vancouver is the place to be, to settle at least for the time being. The book was published there.
Well, you could live anywhere now, obviously.
Yes.
And so why do you still stay there?
Well, I'm very much, I love the energy field. On the West Coast generally, certain parts of California also, and Vancouver and surrounding area there, there's a certain there's a certain stillness that surrounds even the, I can feel it even in the city, although there's car, not the noise of engines and all kinds of noises, and yet it's almost, one could say, it's surrounded by a field of stillness. Perhaps it is because you have on one side you have the huge ocean, on the other side you have the mountains, not densely inhabited, very few people live there. So you have that great sense of nature also still there. And the energy field is very gentle. I always feel it when I cross the border coming from Washington State, moving into British Columbia. The moment you cross the border, you feel the energy field changes, and you go, oh, there's suddenly, it's much more quiet, much calmer now, the energy. You can feel that. I like the shift also going into the States. You feel a certain nervousness in the energy field, which can occasionally be exhilarating too. I actually like the change from the calmness of British Columbia and then moving back into the more nervous energy field of the States, back and forth.
We like to think, I mean, here in the East, that there's more of a nervous energy field.
Yes.
Do you sense it here?
Yes, yes.
And we're all very worried, busy people. And so, you know, when you come from the West Coast with your ideas of peace and, you know, and then you've got this beautiful climate and it's all this. And so people from the East will go, well, easy for him to say. Isn't that nice, you know? And they're sitting out there and on their mountain or something, right? And so, you know, so do you wonder, I mean, do you take offense if people say, well, that's sort of West Coast thinking, that's sort of, I don't know, it's a self-help guru sort of, you know, thing. It's a trend. How do you respond to things like that?
Well, self-help is a great thing. Of course, yes, it's true that there are many superficial books and trends in the so-called self-help movement, but basically self-help is a wonderful thing, and there's some of the greatest books in history were basically self-help books. For example, the Meditations by Marcus Aurelius, written 2,000 years ago, books like that. They are self-help books. Self-help, it's true that many new things began on the West Coast, but this is not confined to the West Coast, or is not confined even to one particular culture. This is spreading all throughout Western Europe too. People are very responsive to this now in England, in Germany, in Scandinavia, in
Holland. I guess I don't even want to say so much about the West Coast. It's more just you're thinking, it becomes part of popular culture, this book.
Mm-hmm.
But you're comfortable that it's part of popular culture, that it's on, that the media has taken it up, that it's, you're comfortable with that because it gets your message out.
It gets the message out. It reaches millions of people, and many of whom are actually ready for some inner change, because this is not adopting some new belief system. It's not a new religion. It's nothing to do with beliefs. It's to do with an actual immediate experience. And it's not even to do with a feel-good thing or an emotional thing or an emotional high. It's not that. It's something much more simple and much more basic. Now, the fact that the book has reached so many people, with the help of Oprah, of course, it also means that it reaches many people who are not ready for it. So they open the book, they read a few pages, and they see this is completely meaningless. So they put it back and say, this is rubbish. And that's fine, they're not ready for it, or maybe they need to find their spirituality in some different way. Or maybe they need to go through more suffering before they are ready for it, because it seems that humans need to go through a certain amount of suffering before they are ready for inner change, true inner change. And this is what it is about. So whether you live in Vancouver or Toronto or London or Berlin, it doesn't really matter. When the time is ready, then suddenly you will pick up a book like that, if that's how it comes to you. And suddenly you will read, and something from within will respond, and you'll recognize there's a truth that basically I have known already. It's not entirely new. When you read a real spiritual book, it's never that you say, all that's totally new. It's a recognition of what deep down you already knew. And that's a wonderful thing when you recognize the truth that out there. And but of course the book then reaches other people who are not yet ready, who don't recognize it. So either they throw the book away or they write a review about it and say, this doesn't make sense at all.
You know, we're talking about the power of now, but we have to talk about the power of Oprah. A very powerful force she is. Tell me about working with Oprah. What's that like?
Well, the wonderful thing is that Oprah basically is no different on camera from how she is off camera. So I observed that she doesn't play roles when she's on camera. She's simply herself before she goes on, sits down in front of the camera. She's the same person when she gets up. So she, and this is quite rare on TV personality, not to project some kind of role, to play a role. And because she is herself, that's what people respond to. She's the genuineness in her. They recognize that. And so she told me that story of how it happened for her. She was, in her 20s, and she was a news reader at some local TV station. And her great aim in life, she said, was to be like Barbara Walters. So that was her image. I want to be like that. And so she was reading the news one day, very kind of trying to project this confident image of the news reader. And she was reading a number of countries, some news item. And she came to a country and she read country, England, France, Canada. And she said, did I just say Canada? Of course, I mean Canada. And then she started laughing on the news. And at that moment, the role that she was playing collapsed, and she could feel that power and aliveness coming through. And that was the beginning of her true career. So she had to give up of that mental image of wanting to be Barbara Walters or this or that, and just could be, when the role collapsed, she could be herself. And that's where the power comes from. And now, of course, her main passionate interest is spirituality, to bring this to people, to use her function in this world and her incredible influence to bring spirituality to millions of people. As I said to her, your role is an essential part of awakening, the spiritual awakening, the shift in consciousness on the planet. So I believe what Oprah and I did together, the web seminar last year, was very significant because it was part of that shift in consciousness. And sometimes people ask me, well, what's actually happening out there in this world? How do you know that there's a shift in consciousness happening because there's so many bad things happening? Well, one good thing happening was the recent election of Obama. This is the difference in consciousness between Obama and his predecessor is just so striking. That is a real, real shift that has taken place. I'm not saying he's the Messiah. Not one person can change an entire country, but it's a very significant thing that happened there.
I was going to ask you about that, about what you thought about, we're looking for hope, and so you see hope.
Yes.
In him.
Yes. Well, I'm not saying that the answers will come from him, but he is a manifestation of a change in consciousness. The fact that he got elected is a sign that there is a shift happening in the collective consciousness. So he's not the answer. He's a manifestation of the answer. The true answer comes from within human beings, collectively.
You know, there's an emotional thing about, reading a book, people so much hope that there is an answer in there, but they're also frightened that, you know, how can this one person have the answer? How can you have the answer?
Yes,
you know?
It's not that this one person has the answer. It's just that a shift is happening collectively, and really the answer can only come through you. It comes from you, how you deal with the things of how you deal with daily existence, how you deal with the challenges, and not taking on board all the things that necessarily that you hear in the media. Everybody will tell you every day that the economic situation is terrible in everywhere, and there's a lot of fear in people. They might lose their job, they might, the investments are losing their value, many people are losing their jobs, so there are huge challenges coming. But this is also a great opportunity for human beings to wake up when they are being challenged. How do you respond to these challenges? I would say that your life is not determined by what happens to you, this is what people believe, but that means you're at the mercy of every little circumstance. Your life is really determined by how you react to what happens to you. And how you react, or rather respond to what happens to you, determines what happens next. So if your reaction is of a negative kind, if there's fear and anxiety or continuous mental complaining, this shouldn't be, but it is, then that's your state of consciousness. And then the next moment or the future reflects that state of consciousness. But if you're able to work and live in alignment with the present moment rather than continuously being in a state of hostility towards what is, this is the present, this is where the present moment comes in, the power of now, the importance of not making life, which is the present moment, really, that's all that life ever is, this moment, because where else do you find life except in this present moment? So that's a fundamental thing that, first of all, you need to realize, that life is now and never not now. It's only this moment ever. Past and future only have a secondary reality. The past only exists if you remember it now. The future only exists if you mentally project yourself into some future moment, but even that you can only do now. Your entire life unfolds in this space of now. You cannot think, feel, experience anything that is not now. People don't live like that. They live as if past and future, especially future for many people, were more important than the present moment. And they have a very strange relationship with the present moment, which means with life. For many people, the present moment unconsciously is regarded as an obstacle, because they're here, but they want to get there. So how do I get there? They're here, they ignore this. How do I get there? So they're stressed, they're continuously stressed because they're continuously trying to get away from now. Instead of fully giving your attention to what you need to do now,